is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Our weekly in-depth look at local COVID-19 related topics. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, as we get started today, give us an update on local cases from the weekend and today.
Well, it's been much quieter over the last few days, which has been great. We're reporting 33 new cases today, which is way down from where it was in the past. And it also was quieter this past weekend. So I think overall, we are past the worst of this.
Now, one of the things that stood out to me from Friday's report was, as we wrapped up the month of September, that 81 people in the county died related to COVID-19 last month. And especially over the weekend, I started kind of scratching my head thinking about other disasters of various sorts over the years in Douglas County history. I mean, is this unprecedented for anything being related to that many deaths in a short period of time?
Well, we don't have good data on the 1918 flu pandemic, but since then, this has been really a tragic month. So we had 81 deaths. Typically in Douglas County, we have about 30 deaths a week. And in the last month, we had the 30 deaths a week from things like heart disease and cancer. But then in addition, in some weeks, added 20 deaths from COVID. So it really was a terribly deadly month.
Now, is this level being seen in other counties anywhere?
Yes, it is being the high levels of death have been seen in other counties around the country. The New York Times had a map that showed the death rate per 100,000 since June 15th in the different counties. And sadly, Douglas County was one of the highest.
Wow. I mean, when you think about the entire nation and realizing that one of the highest rates of death is right here in an area that is small, rural, and that's just kind of shocking.
It was. I mean, we've got a few things going against us. One is that the people in our county are older, and older people certainly die at a higher rate from this disease, and we have a relatively low vaccination rate.
Yeah, from the data, it was I think it was 91% of those who died related to COVID-19 last month were unvaccinated.
That's correct. So and most of those who were vaccinated and died were quite old and in nursing homes. And we know that people who are over 70 or 80 don't make good vaccine responses. And that's why those of us who are younger and healthier do need to get vaccinated so we won't pass it on to them. So we saw a bunch of outbreaks in the nursing homes. Almost all of those came in from unvaccinated staff.
Wow. Other counties in Oregon that are having big problems right now?
Well, right now, the counties east of the Cascades are really struggling. You know, those are mostly small counties, mostly counties with limited resources, and they're pretty much all struggling. West of the Cascades, only Linn County and Douglas County are having high numbers of cases.
What about the U.S.? Let's talk about hotspots nationwide.
So the hotspots in the country started in the Southwest, and now it's pretty much moved over to Tennessee, Kentucky, and West Virginia. But then we're seeing big outbreaks in more of the rural parts in the West, North Dakota, Montana, Alaska are really struggling with cases right now.
And as we look around the world, what are you seeing?
Well, around the world, things are pretty quiet. So there's no real hotspots in the world at this point. Eastern Europe is struggling with an increase of cases. We're seeing some countries in Asia, especially Malaysia and the Philippines, starting to struggle a little bit. And then South America, which has been a mess for many months, is now starting to see a resurgence of disease in Brazil and in Guyana.
Now, while our local numbers have come down some, let's talk about the number hospitalized. We're down quite a bit from where we were a few weeks ago, but it's still a very high number. And my understanding is we still have help from National Guard folk and FEMA as well.
It's still really pretty busy. We're over 60 in the hospital. To remind you, before July, the highest we ever had was 20 a day in the hospital. 60 a day in the hospital really stresses the hospital. The hospital is still having people on ventilators outside of the ICU, which is kind of a stretch. And their staff's getting tired. So there was a lot of overtime, a lot of people who worked heroic numbers of hours in July, August, and September, and they're tired.
So what are some of the impacts from this many deaths? I mean, first of all, it doesn't seem like you have to go very far if you've lived here very long to know someone who's died recently of COVID.
That's true. So in a relatively small area like this, we know a lot of people. And with this many deaths in the last 2 months, most of us have known a person, two or three, who died of COVID. As well as for the people who died of COVID, there's always a couple of others who were hospitalized and didn't die, but left really, really weakened by their bout with COVID.
And for those that are hospitalized, how long are folks ending up in the hospital? I know that's probably hard to track, keep track of with this many in the hospital right now. But I'm curious, I mean, are we talking weeks, months? How long are people staying in?
So the hospitals measure this by something called length of stay. And length of stay is the average length of that people stay in the hospital. So an appendectomy is a couple of days. Normal newborn is a couple of days. Early on in the pandemic, the average length of stay for COVID was 7 or 10 days, but now we're seeing the length of stay well over 2 weeks. We've had a number of people in the hospital since August, and during the pandemic, we had people in the hospital for 6 months or more. So many of these people are just so sick that they can't go home, and so it really has been tragic, certainly for those people who died, and really tragic for many who survived.
And with all the protocols right now, it seems like if you're in that state, you're really kind of on your own.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of help for people out there who have COVID. I mean, people have really rallied around those who've been sick. We've seen a lot of GoFundMe campaigns. We've seen a lot of people step up. But it's going to be a long haul for many of these people.
And with all the cautions for the hospital and all of that, not having visitors in, it seems like a very isolated situation if you're in there and hospitalized for COVID right now.
So Mercy has tried very hard to retain that personal contact. So they've had some visiting hours for people in the ICU. Other hospitals haven't, but Mercy's done a good job with that. But even still, visiting for 2 hours a day is not like being with your family when they're desperately ill.
So obviously a big impact for people that work at the hospital. We've got all this additional help in right now. Do you expect the need for additional help to continue for a while?
Well, as we project forward, we see that the hospital census, which is now in the 60s and about 40 in Roseburg and 20 elsewhere, is going to gradually diminish over the next bit. With only 33 cases today, we would only expect to have a few hospitalizations from that group. So I think the number of hospitalizations is going to come down, but it's going to come down slowly. Many of the people who are on ventilators are in their 30s, and they can take a long time until they get better.
Wow. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know there's so many younger people in that situation right now.
Yeah, I mean, early on, we thought this was mostly a disease of the elderly, and it was. But now we're seeing far more people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. We actually had 25 deaths of people in between 20 and 59. That is a lot of young people who had many years of life ahead of them who died. And some of them had underlying conditions, but some were really quite healthy. And so this has been a great tragedy.
Going to take a break. More when we come back with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. inside Douglas County, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1 on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. We'll be talking to State Representative David Brock Smith, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us right now as we go through a lot of COVID-19 data. One of the questions that seems up in the air in some ways is this third dose situation. And for the moment, it's just one of the vaccines that's in that place. Where do things stand?
Well, what we recognize is that older people and people with underlying conditions don't make as good antibody response as younger people and those who are healthy. And so we recognize that their number amount of antibodies to start with was a bit lower and it fell quicker, so that older people seem to be at risk, especially as they were more than 6 months past their vaccination date. And that's why, looking at the data from Israel, we decided that we were going to go ahead and do third shots or booster shots for those who are 65 and above and those 50 and above with underlying conditions. Now, just for Pfizer, but I expect within the next few weeks we'll hear similar recommendations for both Moderna and J&J.
What's the process in getting those two to that point?
So they have to have studies that show that it's safe and effective, and I believe they've already submitted those. Then the FDA looks at it, then the CDC looks at it, then the OHA looks at it, and then they get approved. So I would expect that it's going to happen in the next few weeks.
And as we're in the midst of all of this, I saw a couple signs when I was out yesterday for flu vaccine. I mean, we're already getting to that time of year as well. I don't know how these are put together, but is there any scenario where you would combine a flu vaccine and a COVID vaccine, or does that need to be a separate thing?
I think they're going to be separate. They're very, very different technologies, so I think they'll be separate, but they're both relatively small volume vaccines, and you can get both at the same time. And I'm happy to announce that we're going to have a large-scale drive-through starting on October the 10th. It's going to be in the parking lot across from the library, across Fowler Street from the library. And this is a cooperative effort between Douglas County and the Oregon Health Authority and several others. And we're going to be offering both COVID vaccine, first, second, or third doses, and flu vaccine. It's all going to be free. It's going to be every day except Mondays from 11 to 6. A drive-through kind of process, so it should be easy for people who need to get a second or third COVID vaccine or even a first, or for people who want to get a flu vaccine.
So that begins, what's the date again?
October the 10th, which is a Sunday, and then it goes to the 22nd. On Mondays, they rest.
And once we get started in that, and other people are already giving flu vaccines out as well, now that puts you right in the downtown area, makes it very convenient probably for a lot of people.
It does. And in addition, they're going to do some smaller satellite missions with our Tiger team to deliver vaccines to outlying areas.
So with all the vaccine talk right now, I know a few days ago California ramped up and it'll be in effect down the road a bit, but mandating vaccines for kids to be in school, what do you know about the data that goes into that kind of a decision?
So right now the only vaccines that are approved for kids are for 12 and above. The data that went into that is that the vaccine is really very safe and very effective for those 12 to 18. And for people who are vaccinated, you do not need to quarantine, so that increases the number of days that kids are in school and decreases spread to those kids in school who, for whatever reason, can't make a good immune response. So it really does increase the safety of schools. And what we've seen is that kids make up about 20% of our cases. So the more kids we can get vaccinated, the better we'll do.
And do you think this will be spreading to other states?
I don't know. California has been the most aggressive in pushing vaccine mandates. I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the country.
So as we look at data about the breakthrough cases, I think after we got through July into August and the breakthrough cases with the Delta variant really started to become an issue, a lot of folks felt like, okay, I'm vaccinated now, I'm in a good position. But now people were seeing breakthrough cases. Talk about what percentage of vaccinated people end up as breakthrough cases? I mean, if you look at data, and I know it varies every week, but if you look at data in the last few weeks of COVID-19 cases around the area, what percentage of those were vaccinated?
So when we look at people who've been vaccinated, vaccinations, you're still five times less likely to get infected if you're vaccinated than not. And you're 10 times less likely to be hospitalized or die. So while there are some breakthrough cases, they're mostly in older people that tend to be mild. So, for example, I told you we had a number of outbreaks in the nursing homes. And early on, when we would see an outbreak in a nursing home, everybody would sick, and we'd have a lot of hospitalizations. In those nursing homes where people were vaccinated, we saw far fewer cases. And most of the people who got sick were only mildly ill. So the vaccines help in decreasing the chance that you get infected at all and decrease the severity. So while clearly breakthrough cases or vaccine failure are important, they're pretty uncommon. And again, remember in those people 20 to 60 who died, not a single one was vaccinated.
And what about breakthrough cases when people are in that category? How frequent is it that they contract COVID and end up passing away?
So pretty uncommon. So in the whole month, we only had six or seven in the last month who were vaccinated and died. And you'll remember that over 50% of our population, of our adult population, is fully vaccinated. So about 55% of our adult population is vaccinated, and yet they only made up of seven of the 81 deaths. So again, you know, the risk of being unvaccinated and dying is 11 times that of those who are vaccinated.
What new things out there are being learned about the COVID-19 virus as we move through this pandemic?
Well, perhaps the most exciting this week is the announcement by Merck of a drug called molnupiravir, and that is an antiviral drug. So we have antibiotics, which work against against bacteria, and then antiviral drugs that work against viruses. So we probably know about acyclovir, which works against herpes virus. And we have a number of antiviral drugs that work against HIV and work against hepatitis C. And those are great because most of them are very well tolerated and they're safe. And so we've been looking for an antiviral drug that works well against this COVID virus. We have one that we use in the hospital called remdesivir, but it's not very effective. It needs to be given IV. But this new drug called molnupiravir is an oral drug that could be taken either if you were exposed or after you contracted the virus, and it seems to decrease hospitalizations by about 50%. It's an oral medication that's taken twice a day. Boy, that would be a game changer.
How long has that been out there?
It's not been approved yet. So it's just in the final stages. There was a good phase 3 trial done by Merck. They've submitted it to the FDA, and I'm hoping that before Halloween, we'll not only have this approved, but have this available for people who are positive. We already have now the Regeneron, which are this cocktail of antibodies, which really does seem to decrease the risk of hospitalization and death. And we're hoping for a future where if you're unlucky enough to get it, you get treated with an antiviral and antibodies and tremendously decrease your risk of hospitalization and death. That would be great. But to get there, we need to get our case count down because there's no way to be given Regeneron to 300 people a day. We only get about 100 doses a week. So we really need to keep our case counts low so that these other really promising strategies can be used appropriately.
So then if I understand it right, this is something you wouldn't take unless you became COVID positive, right?
Well, we're not exactly sure. We think at this point it would probably just be for people who tested positive or very high-risk people who were exposed. So you can imagine in a nursing home, when there's a case of a disease, you might treat everyone to keep them from getting it. That's similar to what we do with flu. So when there's flu in a nursing home, we treat all of the residents with Tamiflu, which is an antiviral drug against flu, and has been very effective in decreasing the spread in nursing homes. So we might come up with a strategy like that for these new antivirals, but it's not for sure yet.
About a minute left on Inside Douglas County. Let's go back to kind of where we started. 81 people in the county died related to COVID-19 in the past month. Any other thoughts about that huge loss of life?
Well, that's a huge loss of life. I mean, we mourn any loss of life, but to have that many in a month was just really shocking. Again, remember, we typically only have about 30 deaths a week, and there were some weeks we had over 20 deaths from COVID. So very clearly in August and September, and hopefully not in October, COVID will be the far and away the leading cause of death. So the leading cause of death now is cancer. We have about 8 deaths a week. Heart disease, we have about 8 deaths a week. And then all of the other causes add up to the remainder.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on again today.
Well, thank you for having me.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.